This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yeah, welcome to Panic City. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. On the show tonight, there is so much to come. So much to come, including an absolutely fantastic day for the New York Knicks. Finally pinpointing exactly when the Yankee goals for a season were changed. And we begin with the New York Mets and their struggles that have led to the dreaded team meeting. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Get on the phones early. We will go to them often tonight. We'll have plenty of time to discuss things that you want to talk about, including more football as well with the Giants and Kenny Golladay with a minor tweak of the hamstring. Losing some reps with Daniel Jones, it's not ideal. But we do start with these Mets. On Twitter, by the way, at Chris Carlin, and of course on the gram. That guy, Carlin. So it came down to all of the struggles and, of course, the team meeting from Luis Rojas. Here's the Met manager just a little while ago.
Yeah, I had a little talk with them. We talked a little bit about hitting before that, and I had a little talk with the team. I mean, nothing like a rah-rah meeting or anything. It's just getting connected, you know, as the family we are.
And what prompted you to call that?
No, it's just the same thing I just share with you, like, just the awareness of, hey, like, you know, let's keep trusting it. Let's have fun out there. Let's, like, all those things. Not being repetitive, but just bringing up some points of, you know, us maybe falling behind games early. What does that mean? There are different games out there, but our attitudes don't change. And, you know, it felt kind of those themes. And, you know, it's all good. I mean, it was a really good talk amongst us.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Mets can't get out of their own way right now. And look, I get it. We could talk about the injuries all night long if you want. That's fine. The bottom line is this team is not getting to the playoffs. This team is not winning the division. And for as bad as the Phillies have been, for as bad as the Braves have been, I want to believe in what the Mets have, but I personally just do not think that you are going to have Jacob DeGrom for the rest of the season. It's kind of what I'm counting on at this point, considering everything they had in the first half of the year in terms of his injuries and what we saw from Taijuan Walker last night, which frankly was more of the same. It doesn't have to do with still being able to throw the ball 95 and 96 when you are really hitting your absolute wall, as you will hear me say this quite a bit. After throwing a combined 76 innings over four seasons and over 100 now this year, you can't expect this to be the same guy that he was in the first half. And now that leaves you down to an awful lot of question marks. And frankly, this bothered me to no end. This bothered me to no end. And if this was the case, I would think the owner would be bothered too. Buster Olney, just a little while ago, was on with Michael and Peter. And was asked about why the Mets did not pursue a starting pitcher over the last few weeks leading up to Friday's trade deadline.
First off, as you know, the starting pitching market was relatively mediocre, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Jose Barrios was out there. He wound up getting traded to the Blue Jays. He was probably the best available guy. Kyle Gibson was probably the second best available guy. It wasn't a class, you know, that overwhelmed you. Max Scherzer sort of developed late. We know that Max wasn't going to accept a deal for the Mets. I will tell you this, that from what I understand, and I've heard this from a couple sources now, the Mets were working on a lot of different things that were more aggressive than what they wound up with. they got word about Jacob DeGrom that he was going to be out for an extended period of time, and the Mets basically backed off some of those conversations they were having. You know, maybe there was a feeling of, boy, if we don't know what's going to happen with DeGrom, we don't want to pour a bunch of assets down the hole of 2021. But they actually backed off some conversations. I wish I could tell you exactly what those were for, but I've heard that from a couple of different sources.
Wow. So they were in it for a couple of guys, and then they weren't in it for a couple of guys. We're probably talking about the likes of Kyle Gibson at that point. Yes, because the market was not nearly as strong as you would hope. However, as much as it might be the responsible thing to not overpay in that instance for somebody who's middle of the road, what's also irresponsible is to punt on 2021. Now, Buster does not come out and say that directly. It's kind of openly wondering, right? But it is a fair question. Did they decide, once they heard that DeGrom was going to be down until at least September, we're not giving away any prospects to go and add a starting pitcher to this year's team, and we're going to let whatever happens this year happen? Well, then that whole theory, that whole talk that we heard from Sandy last week about having to send the message to the team that you believed in them because you went and made the Javi Baez trade, I mean, to me, that's absolute garbage. Absolute garbage. Yes, you would be overpaying for a pitcher. That's okay every once in a while. We're not talking about emptying the farm system for an average guy. That's not what we're discussing. What we are discussing is giving this team a chance, which you just said you were prioritizing. And in getting Javi Baez and Trevor Williams, really you gave away a top, probably 10 prospect. But it wasn't anybody. I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong was a good first-round pick. You don't expect him. I don't know if he's going to be a 40-home run guy. It certainly doesn't sound like that. It sounds like he was a terrific defender and a very good player, but I don't know that Pete Crow Armstrong was going to be the next Aaron Judge. Okay? We won't know that, obviously, for a couple of years. But clearly the Mets didn't feel that way because they were not going to overpay for a Javi Baez, and the market for position players was a lot softer than it was for starting pitchers. And if they decided, you know what, not giving up any big-time prospects for a pitcher right now, because if we don't have DeGrom till September, we're cooked. I mean, if that's the case, and you could certainly argue where it would be, I mean, that is baseball malpractice. Intentional malpractice. I'd be really disappointed if that was the case. Baez makes you look like you were going after it. He does, and he's a cheap rental. Whereas this instance, not so much. You know, it is funny that Sandy used to make fun of the Wilpons and the cheapness that would happen publicly on his Twitter. Remember when Sandy was active on Twitter back in the day? Yeah. And now, when it comes to wanting to help this team win, when you have the money to work with and your prospect pool, maybe you're working to build it back up because Brody didn't do you any favors, you still have to remember the fans that have been waiting and waiting and waiting. Waiting for this to come back. You do owe it to them, too. So don't tell me about how Baez was the guy that proved to our players that we really were going to go after it when you knew about DeGrom, and that's when you backed off starting pitching. That's some weak sauce. 800-919-3776. As a result, Mets aren't getting home here. They're not getting home. They have to win the division. And all you need is one of these teams to get hot. And they have not taken care of business against the division, against a bad division. 21-23. I mean, that's just flat out embarrassing. Now, Spike is in St. Pete to start us off tonight. Spike, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I am great. I am so great as a Knick fan, you have no idea. I just, this was a fleece job to me. It almost seems like a fleece job. You know, you can't, I heard you on the crossover with the K show, and you can't read dimensions. People don't know what the hell they're talking about. Anybody that could say Fournier and Kemba, even Kemba at 70%, is not as good as I wanted to mention the names because the guys aren't there. This was a brilliant move, and I had a feeling I got on a K show. I'm fortunate enough to get on, and I told the boys yesterday, I said, listen, they got something cooking. They're not ending the way this is. Takes a lot of pressure away, and I gave you full credit. If you heard it, good. If not, I gave you full credit for the first person I heard on any airwaves, it's almost always you guys, about not re-upping Julius Randle. And I'm taking nothing away from his fabulous season last year. Nothing. He played out of his mind. But he was exposed. Totally exposed. Whether it was too many minutes. Right. So, under normal circumstances, say he played 70 games and they lost the series, whatever, 4-3, 4-2, you'd make him an offer now. You would have. I got it from you, and I stole it from you, and I don't think you mind because I gave you credit.
No, this is I expect them to make an offer here soon, Spike. And thanks for the call. I think the bigger issue here is that Randall's not going to fit them for the long term as a big piece of a solution. I think even if he were to accept a long term deal now, it wouldn't be because he felt like, or they felt like, in offering it, they wouldn't be able to trade him. I absolutely think that Julius Randle, as well as he played last year, and he was terrific during the regular season, and I know what happened in the postseason, okay? But I don't think that Randle is going to be one of the guys who's going to be a centerpiece. I mean, we absolutely saw that Julius Randle was not a centerpiece this past year. We saw that when he got to the postseason and he got shut down and there were no other options, he wasn't going to be able to get it done. He's a number three on a good team. That's what he is. So if the Knicks go and get two other guys that are top-level superstar players, maybe Julius Randle could be their number three. I don't have a problem with that. But if you think he's a number one or number two, you're just not paying attention. Sully in Farmingdale, up next, 98.7 ESPN. Sully, what's going on?
Hey, Chris. You're doing a great job. I really enjoy your show. I'm a diehard Yankee fan, but I just wanted to sort of comment about the Mets. They have an opportunity this year. The National League East is very, very weak. And for them to sort of sit back and not make the moves to get them over the hump is, you're right, it's reckless. Their fans deserve it. And they should have made the move to get another pitcher. The opportunity is now. And you can't just keep pushing it off. So, you know, I totally agree with you. I think the Mets are missing an opportunity. I still think they're going to get in, but they should have solidified their pitching staff.
Yeah, if you're honestly in that room making a decision and you decide that we're not going to go and get a starting pitcher, even in a weak market, we're not going to go get some help for this team, even if it means we have to overpay a little bit, then to me, it is malpractice because the fans deserve to be back in the mix. They've been waiting for quite some time. And you can say all you want about getting Javi Baez, you know, it proves to that room that you believe in them. Well, guess what? the Mets are not hitting enough to slug their way to a division title. That's what I think was probably taken a little bit for granted, was the fact that the rest of the division wasn't going to come around because they had been so bad in the first half of the year.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. But you know what? Just the law of averages. Eventually, you know, teams like Philadelphia and Atlanta, you know, they're going to play a little bit above 500. And, the Mets are coming back. And, you know, to give Philly and Atlanta, you know, hope, it's just wrong. I think the Mets organization should have did a better job.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And they should have done a better job here. And the team should have done a better job in the first half when they had chances to win some of these games. And I know what they didn't have. You don't have to tell me about it. But when you don't take advantage of opportunities of two other teams, not that the Phillies were going to be great to begin with, but they're right there now. And the Braves, let's just call it what it is. I mean, Acuna's bad luck. They haven't had great pitching this year, but they're still a team that is, I think, better than their record says. I think it's better than their record says. And I think the Mets are worse than their record says. And what tells me that is when I look at, you know, statistics like run differential. And I'm looking at the Braves, and they're a plus 54. And I'm looking at the Mets, who are four games over 500 in first place, and they're a minus 11 on the year. And I don't think the Phillies are that good either. They're minus 17. But they're right on your tail, two back in the loss column. Mel in Queens is next on 98.7 ESPN. Mel, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Colin? You know, I'm enjoying the show. Always checking you out.
Appreciate that.
I want to say with that Kemba Walker that pickup, something that Peter had said earlier, man, where I'd agree with, that's like a sleeper pickup for the Knicks. I mean, they pretty much got him for nothing. And I think people forget that, yes, this year a lot of injuries and plague, but they lost Jason Tatum. But last year they went to the Eastern Conference Final with Kemba Walker. So if he can kind of stay healthy and he can be healthy for the playoffs, I think the Knicks, you know, of course they're not going to be a contender, but I think that's a really, really good pickup. And if he can play well and just say down the line they want to use him and package him with another young player and some money and bring in another player, I mean, that's still an option as well. So I think that's a big pickup for the Knicks.
Well, I agree. And here's a couple of things. I think that you have to understand that when you get somebody like that, that he is coming off of a year of injuries like he is, and he's 31 years old, you are taking a risk, but it's not a big risk. And Kemba Walker is going to be exceptionally motivated. You know why? He just saw Chris Paul at 37 years old get $120 million. What do you think Kemba Walker thinks right now?
Well,
I get healthy, I can be that guy next. And I got 6 years on him.
I got one better for you, Eva. Could you imagine Derrick Rose and Kemba Walker, what those practices are going to look like? Because Derrick Rose not going to be a slack and just sitting there waiting. So I think the intensity of the practice and everything is going to be good for the Knicks. And I think that culture is changing, and I see them doing a lot of things differently though, over the last year.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to get into it more here in a few minutes and lay out the reasons why this is – thanks, Mel, for the call – why this is a fantastic move for the Knicks. But – I think that when you have those two guys together and you are also having Emmanuel Quickley right there to learn from them as well, then you understand that this is going to immensely, immensely help your team. You have two guys who are ultra competitive, getting after it, and they're two longtime point guards in this league. And you can't have Emmanuel Quickley learn from two better than Derrick Rose and Kemba Walker. That's what I'm also excited about. I think that's an underlying little benefit of all of this. Chris is in New Jersey. Next, 98.7 ESPN. Chris, what's going on?
Yeah, I love the Kemba Walker deal. I love what the Knicks are doing for the first time in my entire life. I think they're starting to not become a joke anymore. And I think in the past, their free agent pitch has always been, well, it's New York. You know, you're going to win here and you're going to be a god and this is all that. But they haven't had teams that have any kind of foundation. And for the first time, you're seeing a Knicks organization that's actually paying attention to these things and is building in the right way and getting the right kind of players.
Yeah,
so that's what I'm excited for going down the line.
Understandably so, because you actually, I mean, can I actually use the word faith? Like, you actually have some faith that they know what they're doing?
Yeah.
I mean, how bizarre does that feel?
It almost feels like something's going to go wrong, but I don't want to go there yet.
No, I understand. You feel like it's going to blow up in your face. Appreciate the call. And look, the impending doom is a familiar feeling for Knicks fans, as you would totally get why they would feel that way. No problem with it at all. But I actually think that there is some real faith in what's going on. And if you notice how much my voice is cracking as I say that, it tells you how uncomfortable I am even in saying it. That, yes, the idea that you could actually believe a little bit in what's going on is amazing. Boy, it really is cracking. Fascinating to me today how so many Knicks fans have really not been that into the Kemba Walker move. I have to tell you, it broke today at around 10 a.m., and when I saw it, I was very, very excited. This was something that we brought up a few weeks ago when he got traded to Oklahoma City, that maybe this wouldn't be the worst route to go. That if things did not work out in free agency, maybe you would think about making a trade and taking a pick with him to take him on. Now, that's not Oklahoma City's game. It really, more than anything, would have defeated their purpose of trading for Walker in the first place because they got picks with the Celtics to take him off their hands. But even better, he is bought out of the $74 million that he was owed, and he signed with the Knicks, 2 years for $8 million per. Here's why it's great. There is no risk here whatsoever. There truly isn't. Kemba Walker is not going to keep you from doing anything in the next year and a half, 2 years, with free agency, needing cap room, etc. Nothing whatsoever. This is not an albatross contract in any way. That's number one. Number two, when you look at the possibility here of having Walker play with Derrick Rose, I told you already about the positive impact that I think it will have on Emmanuel quickly, but I think more than that, you've got two guys who, when they're playing 25 minutes to 30 minutes a game for you, they're going to be at their best. I mean, let's call it what it is. We saw Derrick Rose this past year when he had to play more minutes down the stretch of the season, he started to wear down, and understandably so. This is a guy that has been littered with knee injuries in his career. Oh, did I mention that Derrick Rose has been through this kind of thing before? This is what everybody has to relax about when it comes to Walker, okay? You're all bent out of shape about his health and about why the Celtics wanted to get rid of him. Well, the Celtics wanted to get rid of him because his health was a concern, but they also had $74 million to deal with for the next two seasons. And they needed some more salary cap flexibility. Kemba comes here off a year when his knee was a problem. And he spoke openly down the stretch of the season about how he couldn't wait for the offseason to really get a good plan in place to get his knee back to a much, much better place. Now, at 31 years old, am I expecting to see the 26-year-old Kemba Walker all of a sudden show up in training camp. I am not. And that's not what the Knicks think either. But what they are getting is a true point guard, perhaps the truest point guard that they've had since, well, Bart mentioned since Jason Kidd. I mean, that's kind of possible. And you're getting a guy that's a serviceable three-point shooter. He's a terrific scorer. He can do a lot of different things for you. And now you have, in essence, traded Elfrid Payton and Reggie Bullock for Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier. If I told you that going into this offseason, this would happen. And I asked you that the question was simply this. Will the Knicks be a better team? Your answer would have been yes. Did they get any big-time players? Well, Walker has the ability, in theory, to be a big-time player. Maybe not quite at the level as before, or at least for the same amount of time on the floor. But he can be an excellent, excellent player for you. And he has been a star player in the league before. And he's not removed all that far from being a four-time All-Star. The knees are a bit of a concern. There's no getting around that. But they were for Derrick Rose, too. Do I have to remind you that Derrick Rose had a torn ACL and tore his meniscus twice? And yet, this season, this past year, we saw what he is still capable of doing. He's not playing at his MVP level, but he's still playing at a reasonably high level. Certainly at the level that can help you win games. And Kemba Walker can also do that. And he will be playing at an even better level, I believe, than Derrick Rose. Then there's also this. How motivated is Kemba going to be? I mean, he signs a two-year deal to be home at $8 million per. Okay. He's going to do everything he can to get his knee right when he's looking at the money that's being thrown around right now. And you can't tell me that when he's looking at Chris Paul getting $30 million a year for 4 years, $120 million, that he's not thinking, wait a second, I'm 6 years younger than that guy. If I can show I'm healthy, I can be right back in the saddle. And in the meantime, I can help my hometown team continue to improve and continue to get better. And this is the most important point in all of this. My friends, this was not going to happen overnight. It's been a long, long, long time. We know. We know that you have been hoping and praying and waiting to get the superstar to come to New York, and that superstar has not done that for quite some time. So, you have to find a way to get back to the days where it was a desirable place to play. Well, this past season, the Knicks made advances in leaps and bounds over what they were in years past. They were never a destination for the last 15 years. They never were. Other than Amari Stoudemire, LeBron had, you know, was not coming here. He says, you know, thinking back now 10, 11 years ago, that, yeah, you know, I was going to go to the Knicks at one point. I don't buy it for a freaking second. I really don't. Because it was clear from the get-go that when he had the meeting with the Knicks, that he had absolutely no interest in what was going on there. It was very clear. So now you have Walker, who is rejuvenated mentally with a chance to make more big money. But more importantly here, as a respected player in this league to continue to help build the reputation back up of the Knicks. Those leaps and bounds, those steps that they took this past year, they have to keep going forward. That's not an easy thing to do. And yesterday, the Knicks were only marginally better, and they were not a four seed in the East. I still think they're not a four seed in the East, but they don't have to be. What they have to be is a team that continues to show it's a good place to play and continues to show growth and development among younger players. That's where it's really going to show. Quickly, Toppin, RJ Barrett. If they continue to grow and get better, and you add in all of what they've done so far, you could have something pretty darn good. Of course, it's not a championship team yet. It's not close to that. But knowing that it's going to take even longer, you have to be comfortable with that. It wasn't going to happen overnight, and you knew that. So just give this some more time, but rest easy knowing that your team is flat out better than it was a month ago, 2 months ago, or when they last left the floor against the Atlanta Hawks. Not marginally, it is better. Wins and losses next year are important. Yes, they're a part of continuing to build that reputation back up. But more than anything, it's about how players feel comfortable, how they're treated, how they believe in what's going on in management, and everything that goes with that. That's where the biggest growth can be made in this organization. And that's also why Kemba Walker joining the Knicks is freaking outstanding. By the way, it is National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. Is that correct, Brian Mungia? National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day?
I think you're right. Right. I thought it was National Cookie Day, but let me double check that.
All right, let's verify what that is, because I have some thoughts on this. And as you can imagine, I would welcome your input, but
it is National Chocolate Chip Cookie
Day. It is National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. But
cookies.
Yeah, exactly. The thing I would say is, to start with, all right, we can make a little list later. Top five cookies, maybe.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. Buddy of mine down in Philly, Jack Fritz, who was the producer of the show I used to be on, made his own top five list today, and he should frankly just resign based on what I saw. But we'll get to that list in a bit. Just know this. I'm not going to keep you in suspense on number one, because number one on that cookie list is being honored with a national holiday today. There's an OG, and he's still on top. And his name is the chocolate chip cookie. 800-919-3776. Val in the Bronx starts us off this hour on 98.7 ESPN. Val, what do you got?
Good evening, Chris. How you doing, my man? I tried to get a hold of you earlier on the Bart show.
We're sorry we didn't get you in. You know, it gets a little jammed up time-wise.
Yeah, no, it was not your fault. It was a great show, and I had to run. But I got three quick points I wanted to make for you, and I actually agree with everything that you're saying. Point number one, the last time we spoke in most recent history, one of the things I told you, I said I liked what they're doing in free agency, but I had some concerns. The deal that they made yesterday actually alleviated those concerns, because they showed me that they can actually play in the weeds. They can make something where you don't think there is something. They can kind of sculpt something and quietly do it. There weren't that many loud moves that I really liked out there for us in this free agency. And that right there was a silent assassin kind of move that I really liked. Point number two, people are sleeping on the fact that everybody's calling this just bring it back. But I think one thing that people are forgetting, when Tibbs starts to get a group, and he has a couple of guys or a few guys that actually understand what he's saying and what he believes in. Like, this year is one of those years where it's not a feel it out anymore. He can actually tell people and direct people specifically and know for a fact they understand exactly what he's saying. And point number three, the two guys.
I think that's an excellent point. I'll let you make point number three, but that's excellent. And it's not something, frankly, that I had considered all that much.
Yeah, and they actually even brought back Taj, too. And point number three, the two guys that we got out of everybody that was out there, some of the people that they were talking about, there were questions as to how they actually fit in. Now, you got the issue with the defense, but the thing about it is, European guys are known to be open to coaching. They're fundamental dudes who, you know, are looking to you to put the understanding of the game in their head. And Kemba has always had a temperament where he is open to coaching. He is a good character dude when it comes to that. So you got two guys that, you know, they're going to fall in line with what Tibbs wants them to do. I actually really, really like where we're moving. And everybody keeps saying, you know, it's nice, but it's not a championship. You're not going to just jump there. You got to take step, step, step. And you got to show people things. They actually answered a lot of the things that were exposed in that postseason. And if you can't get that bona fide start, that's the next best alternative. Have a great night, Chris, and I'll talk to you soon, my man.
All right, cool. Thanks. Appreciate you checking in. The second point was an excellent one about the idea that you want to have guys on the team who understand exactly what you're trying to do, what you're selling, and how you're trying to make it happen. Now, I still will always take the talent over that because talent will end up winning out, but this was not going to all come together immediately. We all have dreams of it happening. Heck, I'll admit it. I was sitting here dreaming last month. I'm not even a Knick fan. I just love the intrigue. And I'm sitting here a month ago thinking, Kawhi and Dame Lillard together, New York, let's go. That's what I was thinking about. But if we're being realistic, we understand how these things come together. And it's about being positioned properly when the deal shows up on the table. And boy, look at the players, by the way, that the Nets developed and then traded away to put themselves in this position. You know, Dinwiddie just got $62 million, something like that. You had Jared Allen get $100 million the other day. You had a couple of these other guys. You know, Caris LeVert's gotten more than $50 million. You know, they've had players that have gone on from development to being really good star players in the league. That's what you're trying to do here in some ways. You're trying to take some of these younger players, develop them, and then when the time is right, they're either part of the solution or you're ready to move on to the guy who is the solution. Doc in Nassau County is up next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Doc.
How you doing, Carlin? I just was listening earlier about the Mets. You know, I've been a Mets fan for 53 years. I was at the series in 69, so I go way back. And I'm watching this team, and I'm looking at the NL East. And, you know, with DeGrom out and hurt, and now you look at the batting and the rest of the pitching, I think the Mets at best are really not great. And they're going to have a handful with the Phillies and the Braves. But I think the difference coming down the stretch, other than the fact that Lindor is hurt now, and beyond that, nobody really considered the fact that he's coming from the other league. He's got to learn the pitchers now this year in the National League. And the second best statistics hitting guy on the Mets is Dom Smith right now. I look at all this and I say to myself, the bullpen isn't great. And I think the Mets are going to run into a situation where it's going to be tight down the stretch with the Phillies. And I think the difference is going to be Joe Girardi. He's got the Phillies coming at the right time. And again, I'm a Mets fan, so it hurts me to say that. But the reality is I think the Phillies with Harper and a few of their other guys getting hot, Realmuto and couple other guys, I just think that they're going to be the team that's going to take the National League East. I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Biggest issue is they're trying to stretch a couple of relievers into starters. Their bullpen has just been atrocious. Ian Kennedy is not going to fix that by himself, but I do think the Phillies are on the come a little bit, and I think the Braves will be at some point here. I want to be more optimistic about the Mets situation. The problem is the starting pitching. It's not nearly where it needs to be. And if they were counting on slugging their way out of this by adding Baez, I think that was just foolhardy. You know, that was completely miscalculating the situation, and I get it. The offense had started to come around some last week, but not enough to where you think all of a sudden you're going to be pounding guys into submission.
And I got to say one more thing. I don't understand how the Mets can have a bullpen with Familia in it. I just don't understand how this guy could still be on this team. I've never seen a guy blow more games in the clutch situations. You know, Diaz is a little better this year, and he was horrible last year. But, you know, like you said, the Mets bullpen is just completely atrocious.
Well, I was talking about the Phillies bullpen at the time, and thanks for the call. The Mets bullpen is not atrocious. I understand what you're saying about the idea that the that Familia is not somebody that you feel great with in a big situation. Totally understand that. What I would say about it, though, is that the Mets bullpen should be good enough to get them home when all is said and done. The problem is the guys pitching in front of them. And this is an awfully big start tonight, even though it's only his second one back for Cookie Carrasco. 800-919-3776. Oh, my buddy Joe in Colonia is up next. Joe, what's going on?
Chris, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
You know what? On Sunday, I'm sitting back enjoying watching Columbo, and something clicked in my head to compare baseball with golf. I'm sorry. And why is it in golf, the announcers whisper, nobody could say nothing as the golfer's teeing off. But in baseball, when the batter's up and the pitcher's throwing a ball at 95, the fans are doing everything in their power to distract the pitcher and the batter. You know, in baseball, that, you know, you could kill someone. And with that being said, I just want to hang up and listen to your response. Thank you, my friend.
Sure. Golfers are wusses. How about that? No. For whatever reason, that's just always the way it's been. And in golf, you're out on the course by yourself, and those players have all been trained that way, and it takes their concentration off. But in baseball, you've always played in front of a lot of people making noise. I don't know why that is, but it is something that has just always been the case. And I guess just growing up and understanding as you reached each new level of baseball that as you went along, the crowds got a little bit louder and a little bit louder, you were more than used to it. That's all. What I enjoyed there is the mention of Columbo, which was a show that my mother just absolutely used to love. 800-919-3776. A couple of other things I wanted to get to, one of which, Carmelo Anthony, before we return to your calls. So Carmelo is signing with the Lakers. And Bart and I were talking about this quite a bit earlier today on Bart and Hahn. Isn't it interesting that Melo, who I've always felt is exceptionally overrated as a player, a good scorer, but never a winner in the NBA. I have no interest in hearing about the gold medal. That means very little. And I honestly, his championship at Syracuse in college basketball, it's so different. It's not even funny. Not taking away from it. But in college basketball, when you had a couple of stars like that, or you had a star like that and a guy like Hakeem Warrick and a guy like Jerry McNamara, you were going to be able to win a lot of games. And so when they won a championship in 03, you know, good for them. But I never felt like Carmelo was going to be a centerpiece of a championship team, and his career bore that out. Always exceptionally overrated as a player. Really was. Now, having said that, it's interesting that now is the time that he is joining LeBron James. We know how close they are. members of the Banana Boat crew, along with Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade. And we understand that they have talked about for a long time playing together. Well, that's nice, but I have to tell you, I've never bought it from LeBron's point of view, because I think, you know, that's one of those situations where you tell your buddy, yeah, that'd be great. Let's work on it. Let's make that happen. Meanwhile, you're LeBron James. You can make virtually anything happen because you're not only the superstar, you're the general manager. But it's honestly fitting, I guess, that now is the time he's decided to get Melo in the door. And the reason why is that Melo has finally reached the point in his career where he has great self-awareness about what he is at this juncture and how he can help a team win. Like, I look at the Russell Westbrook move, and I'm not as convinced that Westbrook is going to adapt to what the Lakers are doing. When I look at the Melo move, I understand that Melo has already adapted his game to be, you know, a secondary, tertiary scorer and a guy that can shoot it from the outside, which is what the Lakers need, and, you know, shoot 41% from three and play, what, 25, 28 minutes a game, score 13 points for you, you know, do all those kinds of things to win games. Not going to defend great, but it's not a coincidence that offensively, Melo's numbers the last few years in terms of offensive efficiency have improved when he has become less of a volume shooter. You know, he's making the most out of what he does now as a player than he ever has before. And I think that's going to continue to be the case with the Lakers, because truly, he's going to be asked to shoot it. Like, his offensive role is even going to be less. I shouldn't say role, but the need for Melo to be a star is no longer existent, and frankly, even a lot less than it was in Portland. So this is a great move for LeBron and the Lakers, but I find it curious that now, finally, he's been willing to do that, to actually make that happen. And I have a theory about it. And you can tell me if I'm wrong. Open lines at 800-919-3776. Or even if I'm wrong about Melo being an overrated player, which I'm not. He is an exceptionally overrated player. But LeBron's willing to play with him now that there's some real good self-awareness for Melo. Because maybe before, when Melo was just an ISO guy, 1-4, LeBron knew that he couldn't win with him. But now that he's adapted his game into that of a role player, being so far along in his career, that Melo has the understanding of what his best path to winning a championship is. And that is to be that kind of player at this point. Like, Melo knows that he is not a great scorer anymore in the league. And I am sure that he wants to win a title in the worst way. But I would honestly just tell you this. This is going to be his best chance, but I'm not convinced that they're going to win a championship. I'm really not. And primarily it's because of the age. And LeBron took to Instagram just a little while ago and wanted people to know that he is keeping some receipts. Because over the last couple of days, all he has heard about is how old the Lakers are. And justifiably so. Melo's 37. LeBron, Ariza, and Gasol are 36. Dwight Howard's 35, Wayne Ellington's 35, Kent Bazemore and Russell Westbrook are 32, AD's 28. So the center of their roster, the majority of their important part of the roster, is well over 30. So you're going to hear about age. Here's what LeBron said earlier. I'm sorry, he did tweet about this himself. Keep talking about my squad. Our personnel ages. The way he plays. He stays injured. We're past our time in this league, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do me one favor, please, and I mean please, keep that same narrative energy when it begins. That's all I ask. Thank you. In other words, he wants to show everybody up, and that's great. That's nifty. Good for you. But I'm sorry. When, you know, the majority of your roster is old enough that, you know, their driver's licenses are hieroglyphics, then this is going to be a narrative, LeBron. And as far as the health, that's also going to be a narrative. AD has to stay healthy, and this team being an older one, injuries are more likely. They are going to clearly have to manage, have to use load management a lot more effectively this year. And I have no doubt that LeBron understands that now. No doubt whatsoever. Intense research I'm trying to come up with here, because I cannot remember the name of one cookie in particular that belongs on this list. And it's a little bit frustrating to me that I have not been able to find that as of yet. And it appears that the place that used to have them does not have them anymore. So I guess I'm going to have to keep them off the list. 800-919-3776. All Bald Pan used to have these cookies that, I don't know how to describe them. They were like caramel almost. They had, you know, some sort of a sticky quality to them. Sticky. I don't know how to describe it. But now it's ticking me off that I can't find it. Oh, well. I'm going to keep it off the list, because this is a list that I took incredibly seriously. Phones are open, 800-919-3776, on Kemba Walker, on the Knicks, on Melo to the Lakers. Plenty of that if you want. All of it available to you. So by all means, hit the open lines now. And also the controversy that this may now start. Do we have, I don't know, some sort of music that we can put under this list, Jake? Brian, I don't know. What do you think is an appropriate music for this cookie? Wow, okay. Intense. But this is an intense list. Top five cookies. Number five, ginger cookies. Either a ginger snap out of the box or some sort of a soft ginger cookie. Now, you might be sitting there saying, Carlin, what the hell are we doing here starting with this? Let me tell you something. I used to believe what you believe, that maybe this doesn't belong on this list, and it's absolutely absurd to even suggest any sort of ginger cookie is good enough to be on the top five cookie list. Let me tell you something. I used to subscribe to that. It was an any port in a storm type feeling. But you know what? I pulled into that port, and I'm glad I did. And I stayed a few days. And those ginger cookies, they are good. They are good. Really, really solid in any kind of a situation. I went from there to try ginger snaps, and I forgot that I had had them as a kid, and I love them. I love them. Number four, a branded cookie, if you will. The Nutter Butter. Now, you can come at me with peanut butter cookies if you want. That's fine. I understand that. You all learned how to make them in home economics. We all did. That's fine. Soft peanut butter cookies, all right. The Nutter Butter is virtually unbeatable when it comes to a peanut butter recipe type cookie. And there are many. There are many different options there. Peanut butter chocolate chip, peanut butter this, peanut butter that. There are a lot of different. I saw somebody had, was it a banana peanut butter cookie? Like, it's crazy. All over the map. The Nutter Butter is old reliable. Let me tell you something. You see that come out of that small package when you're going to a convenience store and you need a little something when you're just feeling a little bit peckish, a little something sweet. The Nutter Butter gets it done. Other thing about the Nutter Butter, you don't need milk. You can get it done without the milk. Number three, the Snickerdoodle. Again, wasn't a big believer. Now, big believer in the Snickerdoodle. If you haven't had one, what the hell's wrong with you? Okay? I personally prefer the Snickerdoodles that are sold at Wawa stores that are expanding rapidly in the tri-state area. But I first came across that Snickerdoodle when I was working in Philadelphia at the Wawa stores down there and in South Jersey. And let me tell you something. Hard to beat that cookie. It's got the sugar, but it's without being just a sugar cookie or a butter cookie. It's got a little more for you. You know what the Snickerdoodle does? It underpromises, it overdelivers. Number two, the Oreo. And I will allow this to be a semi-tie between the plain and the double stuff, okay? I like double stuff Oreos. I've always been a relatively plain Oreo guy, but again, the Oreo is just a classic. I mean, they've made an entire genre of ice cream based out of the Oreo, and that's amazing to me. You know, it's not just about chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream that we see, right? No. This is Oreo cookies mashed up with vanilla ice cream, and it's so good. It's outstanding. The Oreos themselves, there was a time, that time probably still exists, but I honestly have not done it in 20 years, 15 years, maybe a few months, where I could eat an entire box of Oreos in one sitting and not even blink. They're just classic. You can't beat them. Well, actually, you can. Which brings us to number one. The chocolate chip cookie in any form is impossible to screw up. And that's what makes it far and away the number one. I.e., if we were to turn to the Oreo, when I was a kid growing up, we always got the knockoff Oreos. You can screw up that formula when you're giving me a Hydrox or a no-name ShopRite Oreo. But they're not called Oreos. Come on. The chocolate chip cookie? Let me ask you a question. Have you ever in your life had a bad chocolate chip cookie? And the answer is no. It's no. Every single chocolate chip cookie is good. Soft, crispy, whatever. Every one. Some are better than others, but the genuine recipe in and of itself is impossible. It's foolproof. If you're an idiot, you can't screw up chocolate chip cookies. Even, let's just say, if they look like Tate's chocolate chip cookies, which are excellent, but they're flat and they're crispy and like you haven't put the right ingredient in there where the chips are actually sticking out from the flat cookie, it's still great. You can't screw it up. That's the brilliance of the chocolate chip cookie. And that's why it has its own day, and that's why it should have its own day. This is where we are. Number five, ginger cookies, whether it's ginger snaps or full-on soft ginger cookies, they're great. Number four, the Nutter Butter. Number three, the Snickerdoodle. Number two, Oreo. It can be plain. It can be double stuff. Don't give me any sort of a Oreo thin. Like, what's the point then? If there's no cream in the middle, why even bother? That's a waste of my time. And then don't give me any specialized Oreos, as I have detailed many times. Plain Oreos, that's the winner. Or double stuff, those are your winners. And then number one is obviously the chocolate chip. And the one other thing that I left out about the chocolate chip is you can put the chocolate chips in anything and make any cookie immediately better. Oatmeal chocolate chip, immediately better. Peanut butter cookie, immediately better. You put peanut butter, put chocolate chips in there. You put chocolate chips in any kind of cookie, you're making it better. So it makes other recipes better. That's why it's on its own. And you might sit there and say, Carlin, how do you not have oatmeal cookies in there? Let me address this controversy right now. The oatmeal cookie is not on the top five cookie list, quite simply, because you can screw up an Oreo cookie. Or not Oreo, excuse me, oatmeal cookie. There are some, not all oatmeal cookies are satisfactory. You can make bad ones, and I've had bad ones, and I'm not even talking about the ones with raisins, which is like, you know, the raisins don't make an Oreo oatmeal cookie better. They don't. But the oatmeal cookie can be great, but it also can be awful. The oatmeal cookie is the Giancarlo Stanton of cookies. I think that probably puts it into perspective for you. My thoughts on National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.